Blog Talk Radio.
When they mention the best, I kill songs, I'm ill, I'm built strong. I'm above most these rappers, I'm standing with stilts on. They see me still here and they ask if he's still on. Without a question, he's a legend, the skills are still strong. Need a boost to make it better, I can better the booth. I better other soldiers in the field like medical troops. I better the youth, the proof, I could never be you. I see my future real clear like I'm ahead of the truth. I'm so dope, they get addicted to me. So I don't write rhymes, I have to go prescription of free. I keep it hot, every drop, by any means necessary. You might be good, but consider me legendary.
Go, say what you want, come right with us. You're witnessing a legend in the making. Go, say what you want, come right with us. You're witnessing a legend in the making.
Good evening. Hello, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Oh, my gosh. I love that song. A legend in the making. Yes, yes. That's what I hope to be doing. That's what I feel like I'm doing, and that's what I'm hoping everybody's doing. Mind you, Wishful Wednesday, but before we do that, we have someone in the building. Are you there?
I am in the building.
Hallelujah. Mountain Man is back, thank goodness. The switchboard has not been the same without you.
Really?
Yes.
Mountain
yes.
Man is back and raring to go.
I am so glad to have you back. We've missed you. The show is definitely not the same without you. It's kind of boring when you're not around. I mean, not that I'm boring because I'm so dynamic, if I do say so myself. But it's just very hard to be dynamic by yourself because I can't talk to myself. Although I do. But it's still not the same.
The dynamic duo.
Yes, we're back. I have to ask you, how did the surgery go?
The surgery went well. It was actually a 2-for-1.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did not know, but there was a hernia involved. Yeah, so they had repaired the hernia as well as the other procedure that I had done. But everything has healed well. We are still working out a few little minor kinks, but Mountain Man is back and ready to roll.
I am so excited to have you back. I told my listeners, and I told you Monday, I'm like the worst friend in the world because I have just not been able to go visit you, but I'm so glad you're back because I missed you.
Well, I've missed you too, and I hope that offer still stands for a little bit, and you know what offer I'm talking about.
Absolutely. If you can deal with how slow it is, it's all for you to use. Mountain Man was in the need for a laptop, and I have one, and I swear to goodness, it's like watching paint dry. And maybe it's me because I really have no patience. I'm sure Mountain Man has more patience than I do. But to me, it's like, and I guess it's because I do a lot of video and photography too, so that's it just slows it down. So I got consumed by the dark side. I actually went over to a Mac. My husband got me a Mac, and I'm like so excited because I can do my videos, I can do my pictures, I can listen to my music, have 50 windows open, and nothing crashes. So I'm sure it'll work for you, Mountain Man, because you just want to do basic stuff with it, so it'll be good.
Yes, well, I know.
Wednesday, I have to interrupt you real quick. What, did you have a thoughtful wish for Wednesday? Anything do you want to share with our listeners?
Wishful Wednesday. I just wish that everything goes according to plan to everybody's plan. If that makes sense.
I have to tell you, I'll take three favorite holidays. All my holidays I like, but my three favorite are obviously Christmas, the 4th of July, and I have to say Thanksgiving and Halloween are close second, you know, like close ties just because, but I love Christmas.
Yes.
Yes, I just love the lights, and I like the way that people are nicer. I love the snow. I don't like the cold. But I like snow. Like, if it could snow when it was 70 degrees, I'd be, like, the happiest person in the world. That's my idea of heaven. I think when I die and go to heaven, it's going to snow, and it's going to be 70 degrees, so I can play with the snow in my shorts. I think that would be awesome. Hey, I can wish, can't I?
But yes,
to me
we can.
I know. But to me, it's just the whole, the jingling. You know, when you hear the street corners with the bells for the Salvation Army and just the Santa Clauses and the parades and just the excitement in the kids' eyes. I think I revert back to like 4 years old when Christmas comes because of the whole thing. I love the tree. I love the stockings. I just love the whole deal. And I just think it's...
I hear you.
So my wish is definitely going with yours. Wishful Wednesday. I really wish for everybody to put the materialism aside, put the stress aside. I know it's easier said than done. But reflect back to how it was when you were a little kid. And if you didn't have a good childhood like I did, you can always still find memories that maybe if you didn't have them, you can create them now. Reach out to a child that might not have as much support as they would like to or as much love as they need or even material things. It doesn't have to be a lot. It can be a little. I mean, sometimes when you're a little kid, share a little story. I don't know if I even told Mountain Man this. I remember one Christmas there was like absolutely nothing under my tree. And it wasn't because we didn't have the money. It's because my mom was like so stressed out and all this stuff going on. So she didn't have time to buy me anything. And this lady brought me a gift on Christmas Day. And I swear to goodness, I thought it was Santa Claus because I had written a letter. And you could have put a string on me and sailed away because I was like a balloon up in the air. I was so excited. Santa Claus brought me these ice skates. I didn't know how to ice skate. I busted my butt a couple of times, but it was so much fun. And, you know, this is something this lady did not have to do. As a matter of fact, my mother worked for her doing laundry and ironing and that kind of stuff, and she went out of her way. She brought us these gifts, and it totally made my day, made my year, actually, we believe in Santa Claus and the power of positive thinking, I guess, and faith. Just it was a real magical day for me because I knew it was something that wasn't expected. I didn't expect it at all. This lady didn't have to do that. And it meant so much for her to take her time out of her busy day on her way to go see her family. She stopped by our house and dropped those gifts off. So, yeah, reach out. You never know. And like I said, that was 100 years ago, and I still remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Never forget it. I really think that was, like, my favorite gift ever. Ever.
Right.
Did I say ever?
You said ever, ever, ever.
It was. It was so awesome. And I remember my mom couldn't take me ice skating because, obviously, she worked a lot. And I remember one year, well, actually one time, a couple months after I got them, there was a huge patch of ice that froze over in my neighbor's yard. And he let me go in there, and I was, like, ice skating in this little patch that was probably, like, 3 feet by 3 feet. But I swore I was in the Olympics, man. I was on ice skates. I put on a show. You know, I thought I was all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot of fun. It was really a lot of fun. It just got a lot of great memories and stuff. So, yeah. So we'll wait for our guest to call in. He should be here in a minute. I had him here a minute. I don't know what happened.
What the heck? We had him here.
I lost him. I didn't touch it. Didn't do anything. Maybe he did. I couldn't.
Well, let's hope he... I did see a number in there.
Yeah,
for
that
good...
was definitely him. Yes, that was definitely him.
Okay.
Man, how are you going to celebrate Christmas? Oh, there he is. He's back, my man. Why don't you patch him in?
So I'm patching him through. Let's go.
Awesome.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you? Welcome to the Diamond in the Rough show. How's it going?
Oh, great. How you doing?
I am doing really, really well now that we've connected. See, listeners, it's not just Mountain Man. Oh, my goodness. Roger's been trying to get a hold of me for like a week and a half, and we've been playing phone tag, and it's been ridiculous. If it wasn't for Facebook, I really, really think I wouldn't have any friends because I'd never be able to get a hold of anybody. I am so glad that you joined us and you're on the show. I'm so excited because I cannot wait for our listeners to learn a little bit about you. So, Roderick, tell us a little bit. Where are you from? What are you about?
Well, I'm from originally from Birmingham, Alabama. I was born there. And I am a son of a Navy man. My dad lives in Virginia right now, but... they traveled about a lot, and I got a chance to travel as well. So that's
like
part
you were
of my
a military life. Brat, so to speak.
Yes, a military brat, and eventually I ended up going into the Navy myself out of the concern my mother had for me to get an education.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up going into the what they call the Navy ROTC program. It's Florida A&M University down in Tallahassee.
Awesome.
Got my commission there as an officer in what they call a supply corps, the business community of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I all got started in the Navy and ended up traveling a bit there in my training time in different parts of the world. And like they say, you join the Navy and you see the world. And I ended up seeing some of the world even while I was still in college.
Now, my question is, how long were you in the Navy for?
Actually, I served 20 years. I'm retired.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to say, that's nothing, but I'm shocked because you don't look that old. Would you go into the Navy when you were 11?
Oh, you're too kind, but thank you.
I'm telling you. Well, Mountain Man hasn't met you, but I have. And 20 years, a career man, I would never believe it. I would have never. I thought maybe you did that before, so I was it. So you're coming from Birmingham, Alabama. You've traveled the whole world with the Navy. You must have been to some exciting places.
Many places. A lot were, I would say, probably in Europe. Italy, Naples, Rome. See some other places like in Greece, Piraeus, Greece, Athens, Greece. Let's see, Israel, Haifa, Israel, Bethlehem, places like
that. Now, how did you wind up back here in Massachusetts?
Well, as a part of my duty stations, as they call them in the Navy, I was stationed at a place called Naval Air Station South Weymouth. It's no longer active as a Navy base now, but I... that was my last place that I served before getting out of the Navy.
Really? Now, when were you stationed there?
I got here in the 1980s, around 1985, and served until I retired in 2002.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. We must have run into each other because I used to be up at the naval base with the well, we call them recruits. They used to do the defensive driving up there for our department.
Oh, okay.
Yep, we used to take the prospect that when the police officers were in the academy, we used to take them up there, and that's where they did the defensive driving and all that good stuff.
They've got the runways there. We can do a lot of driving and just go crazy without even worrying
about
anything.
Yeah, that's why we used it. We didn't have to worry about anything. But I have to ask you, so you were in the Navy for 20 years, and how did you get into acting? How did that come about?
Well, I always wanted to be an actor. I guess it goes back to when I was in high school. I always had a dream of acting, getting on stage. There was many things that was going on with my life then, you know, as far as sports and student government, of course, classwork, but there was just not enough time to really get into acting.
Mm-hmm.
And now I work for the court system here in Massachusetts, and a friend of mine was already in a show, and they were looking for more people to complete the cast, to perform the musical. It actually was called Ragtime. This was back in 2003 when I got started with stage here in the South Shore area. And my friend asked if I would be interested. I said, absolutely. It was almost like a dream come true. It was an opportunity to at least try out. So I went over to this place called the Company Theater in Norwell and auditioned for, a part in Ragtime, the musical. And I was accepted, and it basically got started from there.
So you had never done this before? This is like your first time, or had you had some experience up to this point?
My first stage performance, I had done some small things, like in my church, and it was just, you know, some one-act plays, that type of thing. But a full-blown production on a stage with cast and crew and technicians and all that type of thing. It was the first time that I was on a stage in a theater.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, what part did you get cast for?
I was part of the ensemble. There was like three major groups, the immigrants, the people of New Rochelle, and the people from Harlem, and I was part of the Harlem group.
Now, this is a musical, right?
Yes, a musical, absolutely.
So you sing as well?
Yeah, I do. I really got started singing in church, and I really enjoy singing. And with the voice resonance I have, I guess I'm pretty loud, so it kind of like worked out well for carrying sound, putting the music out there.
Well, I'm loud, but I'll tell you, I sung a couple of times, you know, like harmonized in a choir, but I've had a couple of people say to me, you should come out, you can be part of the ensemble. I just don't have the courage to get up there and audition. I would be mortified to actually sing in front of people by myself. You know, it's safe when you hide behind people, but when you're there and it's just you and they have to hear you, it's still so intimidating to me. Did you find it intimidating at all?
It was kind of fulfilling because I had really the first time I actually started singing was when I was in Navy in Alaska. There was this thing called a Easter Cantata. And
Alaska?
That was one of my tours of duty when I was in Navy.
Good Lord. Well, see, I might sing by myself in Alaska if there's no one around. But you tried out for this in Alaska and you got picked, obviously.
I got picked. They helped sing with the Easter Cantatas, the a musical for the church there.
It's such an incredible experience. So now you said you sang when you were at church when you were younger, when you were a youngster.
Well, not so much, but it was old when I was older, as an adult, not when I was younger.
Now, did you ever, when you were a young child, say, I want to be an actor, I want to sing, I want to do stage? Did that ever occur to you, or was that something that you came to later in life?
Well, when I was in high school, I wanted to act. I wasn't so much into singing at the time. Mm-hmm. But the singing part kind of came along when I was in the Navy as an adult, and they were looking for people to perform as a part of the program for the church service. And
Did you know you had a voice that you were able to sing? Is that something that you kind of knew all along, or?
Well, not so much.
So how did you get this started? How did someone say, "Wow, you can carry a note, you can sing"? Let's get you in there.
As far as the sound, I used to joke the pastor at the time. I said the only keys I can carry are the keys in my pocket. As far as carrying a note in church,
that sounds like me. Even those I lose. You can ask Mountain Man. I can't even find those.
Oh, wow. I can't even carry a tune.
I'll be like, where's that key at? Oh, man. No, see, that's the thing that I find intimidating, because the first couple of times that I went to chorus. I figured it was a small chorus. It was, a choir, actually, choir. It was people that I knew. So I felt comfortable. But when they're like, start asking me questions like, are you an alto, are you a soprano, or, what note? I'm like, what? Had no clue. I'm like, they start talking alphabet. I thought this was singing, not alphabet soup over here. So to me, music is great. I loved music. I mean, I always used to sing at the top of my lungs, and my parents were like, okay, enough already. I'm serious, Roderick. It's amazing to me that someone like you would have the guts to try that later in life and say, you know what, okay, obviously someone says that I can sing, let me do it. I mean, that, I admire that. That's so amazing.
Because
you hear people that are like, oh, I've been singing my whole life. Well, okay, that's, so it's a learned behavior. But for someone that's older coming to it, props out to you for doing that. It's awesome. Now, I have to ask, because I was researching you. Yes, I do that sometimes.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was watching clips from, is it Shakespeare?
Oh, no, yeah.
Oh, yes, I dug deep.
Yes, you did.
I actually put the link on the site because it blew my mind. I was like, okay, this is, so did you know you could do Shakespeare as well, or is that something that, again, came later in life?
Oh, please, that came later in life. Later in life as in last summer, later in life.
Are you serious? See, that blows my mind because that is so hard to do. And,
wow.
To have that caliber to be able to do Shakespeare, and, I mean, that's just, so how did you wind up getting involved with this production?
Well, it's funny, I actually took a class down in Plymouth, so an improv class, and
mm-hmm.
the director of the Shakespeare production taught this improv class.
Uh-huh.
And I was just fascinated with the director, Danny Duggan. She's just an amazing woman, and she just had a way of just providing, an opportunity for you to explore your talent, your skills, your ability, and this. It was called Improv for Performers, and I got a chance to meet her, and I said, she's just incredible. And an opportunity came along later on, that was basically a year before, last year,
mm-hmm.
That I had this class, and I wanted to connect with her again, and the next opportunity was for the Shakespeare piece called Pericles, Prince of Tyre. It was an outside production, a play that was on the Plymouth waterfront. And I had an opportunity to play the part of Cleon, the governor of Tarsus. So that was just an eye-opener. It was like I was learning how to talk and walk all over again.
Oh, yeah, but my thing is, how do you go from improv, that's a far stretch, from improv to Shakespeare?
Well, that was just how I met the director, essentially.
Uh-huh. Now, had you ever done Shakespeare?
No, this
have
is
you
the
ever,
first time doing Shakespeare.
That was your first time doing Shakespeare?
Yes.
Okay, now you just blew my mind. You're telling me. See, this
it blew my mind, too.
It is because I know how hard Shakespeare is. I have a hard time reading it with my kids when they were younger, too. And I remember doing, Romeo and Juliet and class and stuff. And I actually remember, I think I auditioned once. I think it was a funny thing happened on the way. So one of those Shakespeare plays, it was a comedy. And I remember going in there and watching these actors who had been doing Shakespeare their whole life. I was so intimidated because they were so good and were able to, you know, quickly adapt to the persona and the linguistics of Shakespeare and just make it their own. And I'm sitting here going, hello, I can barely speak regular English, never mind to pull this off. I know, and you just, that was your first time, and you just blew, I mean, you hit that out of the park. That is amazing.
Oh,
testament to your talent.
The thing was, I had been doing a number of musicals, different places, and I had only done a couple of plays.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had in my mind, you know, it was one of those things I had basically decided to do, something I wanted to do, never mind. And it just happened to be a Shakespeare production, and it got some encouragement from my friends, like, you know, you need to go for this, you know. She's one of the best directors around with Shakespeare, you know. You can learn a lot from her. I said, well, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Come on, let's do this. So I auditioned.
That is awesome.
And I got into the troupe, the Shakespeare troupe, for that particular production, and, well, you saw what happened, I guess.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know what, I honestly love Shakespeare. I mean, I've seen a lot of their plays, and I know when someone really not that good, and I would have never guessed that that was your first time doing Shakespeare.
Wow, thank you.
I mean, it looks like you have some type of, you know, it's almost like you've been trained that way, you know, that so-called classically trained, because you carry it off, the lingo, everything. It's like you've got it down pat. I mean, that's really a testament to your talent.
Well, I got the great direction from Danny Deggan. I've got to give her credit for, you know, shaping me for that particular part.
I'll tell you, honestly, that's true. If you have a good director, that's great. But you know what? If you're a baker and you're trying to make a cake out of clay, it's still going to be clay. You know what I mean? It's just not going to work. Because I don't care.
Okay.
You can't make, like, you know, no disrespect to the dead, but you can't grab, you know, what's her name, Anna Nicole Smith, and make her do Shakespeare, no matter how good of a director you are. It's just not happening. I mean, the talent has to be there, and it just blew my mind how well you did that. Now, I have to ask you, any projects you've got coming up, what do you see yourself going as far as your acting? Because you have such a diverse background.
Well, I try to do it as much as I can and try to be as diverse as possible. You know, unless there's a particular reason to say no to something, you know, I try to go for it. You know, not to overburden myself because, you know, I do work and, you know, it's some situations are, you know, if there's money involved and others it may not be, but the money doesn't necessarily stop me at this point. I just want to get my experience and exposure so I can, you know, essentially get discovered to a point to proceed. I would like to be a professional actor one day, and never mind at some point possibly direct or even get into production of some work, but that's basically where I'm at now. It's just to get the experience and learn and grow and meet people and just try to expand my own craft and talent as best I can.
That's amazing. Now, real quick for our listeners, if you have any questions or comments, you can call 347-989-1473. The number again is 347-989-1473. We got Mountain Man back in the building, so he will make sure your call does not get disconnected like I am so famous for doing. Or you can log on to the website, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinarywoman, and ordinary woman is WMN. And you can log your questions in there, join our chat room, and, if you have any comments or anything. Now, I have to get back to this because it's just, like I said, I've talked to a lot of actors. I came late to acting as well. Oh, real quick, in the chat room, oh, my goodness, we got a little chat party going on in there.
Exactly.
I know. We've got, hey, Abby, what's up? We got Bobby. We got Cece, Chad, Fanny, guest 3794. Hey, how are you? Leah, Lily, Mary, 66555, and Rob. And, oh, wait, we got more. We got, yeah, Rob, thank you so much, guys, for logging in and listening. And it's just like, yeah, keep growing, keep it going. So we have to get back to Roderick. I was reading here on your little thing that you had, and I don't know where I stole this from because I do that. It says that you've also done productions of A Christmas Story, Showboat, Ida, To Kill a Mockingbird. Now, what did you do in To Kill a Mockingbird? Because that is, like, my absolute favorite book in the whole world.
Oh, that was my second play that I performed. The first was Christmas Story. In To Kill a Mockingbird, I played the part of Reverend Sykes.
Did you?
Yes.
Wow.
That is, wow. That is awesome. See, now I'm like, yeah, okay. See, here I was thinking I was all that because I went out for an audition. I got a little part on a play because one of my actor friends says, you know, if you're serious about acting on screen, you got to do live theater. Like, there's nothing like it to get experience, to learn. So I did. Got a little part as Mrs. Donner in Flowers for Algernon. And that, to me, was so intimidating. It's a small part, but it's a pivotal part. And I had to come up with this Brooklyn Jewish type accent. That in itself was... So I'm like, okay, so I'm feeling real good about myself. Cause, yeah, okay, I pulled it off. But I'm looking at the list of the stuff that you've done in such a relatively small time. Now I feel like a slug. Like, you did Joseph and the Amazing Technique, Colored Dream Coat, another one of my favorites. You were also in The Wizard of Oz at the Orpheum Theater at Foxborough. Hello.
That is big.
That is huge. Okay, so I'll go back to my corner now and go eat humble pie. Wizard of Oz, what part did you have in that?
Which one, The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, The Wizard of Oz, I was what they call General Winky.
I know who you're
the head guy that says, oh, wee, yo, yo.
That is so awesome. Oh, my God. I wish I had a video clipping. I would pay for if my listeners, if anybody knows him and you have a copy of that, I so have to see it. I do. Now, on Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, what did you, what were you in that?
I was Joseph's father. I was Jacob.
Yeah, right.
Isn't that the most hardest part to do?
Joseph is the key, he was the principal part there. Joseph.
Well, I know he was the principal, but that part, Joseph, that's kind of pivotal to the play, too.
It's instrumental, I would probably say, because, you know, Joseph wouldn't be there without Jacob.
Absolutely. Wow. See, I saw the version I saw was this small theater company in the White Mountains, and they did an amazing job, and it's real intimate. I think there's maybe, like, I don't know, 60 seats all together at the Paper Mill Playhouse, Playgroup, something like that. But I loved it, and it was very intimate. I mean, obviously, I don't know if they did it verbatim as it's done because they had a smaller stage and stuff, but I really liked the way they did it. But, again, it's very intimidating because you're singing in front of a bunch of strangers. I won't even do karaoke.
Oh,
because
I find that
is so nerve-wracking.
It's so much fun.
I know it is fun. I'm always singing when there's no one around. See, that's going to be my phobia. I got to get over that. I got to go on, like, I'm going to have to go on vacation some remote part of the world where no one knows me and there's no video cameras, no cell phone.
Oh, come on. You know you better.
You don't have to go to that kind of extreme. Come on.
Come on there, Charlie. You're better than that.
No, because I don't want to get blackmailed. I don't want to get blackmailed afterwards. I mean, it is. That's one of my phobias. I seriously have to get over that.
I've heard you.
See? No, you haven't.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
I know. I forgot about that. So, Roderick, on top of the fact that you've been doing all these amazing productions on stage, you've also been working in film. Now, I see that you've been very busy in that area, too. What are some of the projects that you've been on, some of the films that you've done?
Well, it's been a mix of... feature films and what they call independent films as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically just the division between how much money is actually put on a particular project. But for feature films, I guess my first one was The Game Plan.
Uh-huh.
And this is background work, essentially no lines, just a part of ensuring that the screen is provided with enough people to tell a story. And
mm-hmm.
21 and Pink Panther 2, Hallmark Mall Cop, and the most recent one was the story called The Company Man. It hadn't come out yet, though, but
mm-hmm.
looking to be in that, hopefully, if I wasn't edited out.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny because a lot of people, they see background players, and they just, like, I mean, I've heard some real negative things, like, oh, it's like breathable furniture. It's a lot harder than it looks, a lot harder, because you're sitting around for hours on end. And then you have to follow direction, and you have to look natural. And that's very hard sometimes, because it's not like you have a line or you have a character. And one of the things, again, an actor, a friend of mine says, you need to create a character. Even if you're just background, you need to create a character for yourself. Ask yourself, what am I doing? Who am I? That kind of thing, to really get into it, because it does. You don't want to look like you're just standing there and don't know what to do with yourself.
That's
and
true.
That has a lot to do with people calling you back.
That's true. You've got to be able to look like you're actually a part of what's going on, instead of just standing there or staring at the camera, which is essentially a no-no.
You know, it's funny, too, because that was a thing that I found interesting, because a lot of people don't realize that there is a huge difference between live theater and film. Because in film, you're not supposed to look at the camera, which technically is your audience. And yet, in live theater, you're supposed to incorporate the audience as if you're talking to them, as well as the whoever character you happen to be addressing. I found that to be the hardest part of doing live theater.
There is a transition between the two, like you've said, and for stage, you've got to be able to project and be big enough so that, you know, even the person is sitting in the back and understand what's going on. But with the camera gets right on you, so you don't have to overextend yourself. You know, you essentially just have that emotional presence and your facial expressions, not to be blown up too big, but just enough to show the sadness or the or smile or whatever it might be that you want to portray in that character.
Right.
You know, it's true, and I think that's what's challenging for some people, because when you're on stage doing a live production, again, you have the stress factor. It's live. There's no do overs. You mess up, you got to go with it. You can't. The audience doesn't know you mess up unless they've been there. Yeah, you just got to go with it. And then the other component is that you do have to make it larger than life, because you're not only acting to the guy in the front row, it's the little old lady in the back. Whereas in film, it's the opposite. It's the little nuances. It's where you have to not overact, and you have to be very subtle in the things that you do. So I find that challenging, to be able to revert back and forth between the two. Do you find that to be a challenge as well?
I do find that a challenge, because sometimes I'm so concerned with being good that I give too much energy, and it's not always necessary to give all that energy for the film, because that camera will be there to find you. You don't have to overextend yourself like you would on stage to make sure that you're seen. You know, like you say, it's two different worlds, and making that adjustment, It does take a little temperance, and you just have to be calm when you're in front of that camera.
It's very true, and I find that now, because I have done background work, I find myself actually looking at the background players more than the actual main actors in productions. And I've learned a lot from that, because I can see when a background actor is really good at what they're doing, because they look so natural. And then you can see the ones that are uncomfortable or really have no clue what they're doing, or you have the older actors, and, you know, sometimes, you know, like a gun goes off, and, you know, people react, and then you have the in the background, and you're like, okay, a little bit drama there. But, you know, it is. It's very challenging to be able to get that balance. Now, I have to ask you, what prepares you when you go to be able to switch from one to the other? I mean, you talked about the differences, the nuances, that kind of thing. But what are some suggestions that you can offer people as far as to be able to bring your A game, whether you're on stage or you're doing film?
Well, in front of the camera, it's like everyday life, essentially. You don't have to do anything special to present yourself when you're, you know, being a background person, or even if you're the principal character. You just essentially be yourself. You're being cast for essentially who you are, not so much where you think you might need to go. You're already there, because that's what the purpose of the casting people are, is to find the right person to fill that spot, essentially, just as you are. So you don't really have to do a lot of acting. You just essentially just be yourself. And stage,
now,
of course, is different.
Right.
Like we said.
Now, I have a question for you. Have you ever gone in and created a character and then told, no, that's that's not what we're looking for once you're actually in the middle of the production. And how do you adjust to that?
Well, if you're not that character, you know, that's, which is one of the things that is sought after, is being able to take instructions. Can you do this instead? And if you can take that instruction and then perform that, then that's the adjustment you have to make, is just being able to follow directions and follow what type of person they want you to be. And if you can do that from what you presented initially and give that new, that new presence that they're asking for, and you can nail it, so to speak, then that, pardon me, that's what they want. And that helps you right there, just being sensitive to the needs of the production.
Do you find that, that that's challenging with some actors once they've created a character or have decided this is the way they want to play? Do you feel they have a hard time adjusting to what the director wants, or if there's a change in how they want you to do it?
Well, that it can be a challenge. It most certainly can, but that's part of being, you know, professional, is being able to make those adjustments and being available and having that variety to make the switch from, say, a humorous person to a sad person, or a loud person to a quieter person that may not be so vocal. That's what it's all about.
That's amazing. Now, I have one more thing I have to ask you, because you've already kind of given us an idea of the age range you're in, because you were in the Navy for 20 years and all the other stuff you've done. And I'm reading here that you were a fitness model for a Human Kinetic book on strength training.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, how did you get into that? How were you picked? What would it, I mean, how did you wind up getting involved with that project?
A friend of mine, my Sunday school teacher, actually, he never really considered me, because I didn't actually look my age, and he thought I was a younger man, and he was looking for people, and we got to talking about...
Oh, I got him on that. Yeah, definitely. You blew my mind. What do you mean 20 years in the Navy? Are you kidding me? Yeah, definitely. I can see why he would have not thought that. Yeah. So anyway.
He never thought that was like over 50, or never mind 50 for that matter.
Are you serious? I really, no, honestly, when I met you, I thought you were like 10 years younger than I am, easily. I thought you were like in your mid-30s.
Oh, please, thank you.
No, I'm serious, and I mean, like, I wasn't dark either. We were, like, outside the foyer we met. We were talking at the production, at the premiere of, was it Bridge Crusader that we saw each other at, or was it the other one?
It was the screening of, what was it, The Unknown?
Suitcase?
It was
The Suitcase,
yeah.
That's right. It was The Suitcase. Yeah, and I'm telling you, for the listeners, it blew my mind now, just because I saw you, and, like, I swear, I thought you were, like I said, in your mid-30s. It just blows my mind, because nowhere ever would I have thought you were. And I'm usually pretty good at gauging people's ages. So he didn't think you were. Yeah. So it just blew my mind that you're saying this, that, wow. So he approached you about this for this fitness book.
Yeah, he had another person that he had in mind to be in the book, but for some reasons it didn't work out. And we had already talked. Oh, man, I wish I had known that you were over 50. I would have asked you, but it didn't work out that way initially. But something happened with one of the other models, and he wasn't able to do it for some reason. So he said, okay, you know, you think you could be able to make this day and be a fitness model for me? I said, sure, I'll be glad to do it. So that's basically how it happened. You know, someone
that's
already
amazing.
Knew, and he's been writing fitness books for quite a while.
Wow, that is awesome. That
I
is
have
really
to
great.
Tell the listeners, if you don't believe me, you got to check this guy out on Facebook. That picture of him on Facebook is actually what he looks like. It's not like one of these cases where they have a picture from like 20 years ago. This is like what he looks like now, and it'll blow your mind, because you just said you're over 50. I'm like, yeah, okay, and what planet is that, because not here. Now, what is your secret to staying so young-looking? I mean, what are some of the tips that you can give the rest of us to maintain our, you know, longevity and youthfulness live less the way you do?
Well, I'm not a smoker, for one. I try to live a stress-free life. That's kind of, you know, it's not always easy, but as best I can. But diet is key, I guess. I take, I guess for a number of years, I was like, had committed myself to having vitamin C and vitamin E every day just because.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like air, and, you know, I had to, just had to do it.
Right.
So those kinds of things. But, oh, geez, I don't know if I can really say this, but I might have to say it. There was a time when I was in college,
mm-hmm.
I had a problem with my skin, like it's oily kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I would
mm-hmm.
try to keep it clean. And I, you know, this is not really a plug, but I used oil of Olay a lot to keep myself.
Oh, my gosh. I know.
Wow.
Not a plug. We're not endorsed by these people, but if they're listening, I'm telling you, oil of Olay is like a miracle in a jar. It is ridiculous what it does to your skin. I mean, I know, like, my sister-in-law, who's also in her 40s, actually two of them are in their 40s, and a couple more people that we've actually had people approach us and say, what do you guys use on your skin? And it's like oil of Olay. And they're like, no, really? I'm like, yeah. It's amazing what it does to your skin, but like I said, and the vitamin E, too, is definitely something I swear by. A few years ago, this Chinese lady, she was commenting on something, and she told me vitamin E is the best thing for your hair and your skin. It gives you that, you know, elasticity and just makes it look beautiful.
Elasticity, yeah.
I thought she was full of it. I'm asking her, are you, like, selling them? She's like, no, I don't sell them. I'm just telling you. And I did. I swear by it. It's amazing. Now, Roderick, you're telling me you came to acting late, and how everybody gives you the stereotype that you have to be, like, wicked young and look a certain way, and here you are, someone that just said they're over 50, just came into this, you're an incredible talent. Obviously, you're in shape because you're doing fitness books. I mean, what do you think we can do to dispel this myth that you have to be this 20-something to even crack into the acting industry?
Well, I actually had an opportunity to speak to a class at a community college in Brockton, Massasoit Community College, and
mm-hmm.
I talked about finding the balance between working full-time and acting. And one of the first things I shared was basically just making a personal choice on, you know, knowing what you want and just going for it. You know, you got to live your dream. And there was one lady that was in this class, you know, and she really just touched me. You know, after it was all done, she came up afterwards and said, you know what, I'm so glad you shared what you said because, you know, looking to live your own dream. You know, sometimes people, your friends or whoever, your coworkers, or even family for that matter, may not always be supportive as you would like them to be. But
mm-hmm.
sometimes the things that are said may not be encouraging. But even beyond that, if you know what you want, you know, if you decided you need to go for something, just go for it. And just, you know, if it's serious enough as far as what your wants are, you're going to do what you need to do to make it happen. And
mm-hmm.
I shared that with her because she, you know, she was in a class with younger people, like in her 20s, in their 20s or what have you. And she's an, you know, more mature person. You know, I can't say how old she was, but she's at a point where she thought it was just too late to just do anything. And I think I supported her thought that, like, you know, I'm glad I'm proceeding in this class to go after my dream. You know, she said she had a emotional moment, and I was glad that she shared that, because sometimes I didn't share everything like I'm talking now, but
mm-hmm.
I did kind of, like, at the last few minutes, you know, share some things that kind of, like, touched the heart, and I'm glad I did. And that's one thing that kind of, like, helps me, because, you know, I've always wanted to act, and once I got into it, I said, you know, I got to go for it. You know, if there's
Absolutely.
Any particular reason to say no, you know, so be it, but otherwise, I'm going to just go after it.
You know,
yeah.
That is so true, because one of the things I tell a lot of people, including my children, is if you're not happy in what you're doing, life is going to be really long and really miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that it doesn't matter how old you are, as long as it's something that makes you happy. And one of the things that I find, too, I think it's a state of mind, too, because some people that I know that are a lot younger than I am act a lot older. And I don't know, they just throw off this vibe. I know that I've gone working in background roles where I've been, you know, bumped up as a principal background where, you know, I have a specialty, like I'm a cop or I'm a military uniform or whatever. And they're looking at me like, but you're 20 years older than me. Why are they giving you that part? Well, the reality is, because I don't sit in the corner acting like I'm 47 or 50, you know what I mean? I have the energy. And obviously, you got to be able to pull it off. You got to hone your craft. I mean, if they give me a military uniform, you bet your bippy I'm going to know how to put it on, and I'm not going to look like I just rolled out of a Halloween store, you know what I mean? So that has a lot to do with it, too. And you know, that's the thing. A lot of people don't realize that a lot of the everyday life experiences that they've gone through can really help them if they're interested in acting, because there's some things you cannot fake. You cannot fake that you know how to hold a weapon. You cannot fake that you know how to, you know, kick a door down. You can't. I don't care how good you are. Well, in your case, you probably could, because you're such a great actor. But no,
you got the confidence to go with it, so.
Exactly. Exactly. So your life experiences can help you. I mean, I know for me, the very first major movie that I did, I wind up actually working a lot on it as a background extra dressed as a police officer just because of my life experience and the stuff that I had learned, and I wasn't afraid to try. And sometimes it's just your swagger, your attitude, you know, like, yeah, give me that uniform. I'll wear it till it's, you know, looking good kind of thing. They're making me the poster child. So, again, I think it has a lot to do with your confidence, too, having the confidence to know that you can look good, look the part. And who cares? I mean, best example is Desperate Housewives. I really don't watch it that much, but all those women are in their 40s, and they're doing parts that years ago would have been 20-somethings that would have been doing that part. So the reality is it all depends on us and our attitude. Now, I have to ask you, Roderick, what plans do you have in the future? What projects do you have coming up?
And I was going to ask about a project as well that I seen that was listed as well as the awareness and action project that you're working.
Disabilities Action and Awareness?
Yes.
Yeah,
but I want you to answer the other question first, and then if you have time, you can answer that one.
No, actually, I want to hear about the awareness and action first. I think that's kind of cool. So we'll go about the disability information, and then we can wrap it up with telling us what you got coming down the road.
Okay.
That's something that is, I did, I guess it was like late May or early June. It's essentially a federal training video program that is actually in the works right now, and it's soon to be released and distributed among, I guess, four states as I've been informed. And I play the part of a gym coach where a guy with a young man with disabilities is being abused by his brother, and you know, it's scripted in the particular part. You know, there's four other scenarios that they're using, but this particular scenario, I'm the gym coach, and I discover that this family issue is going on with this young man that has a disability. But once it's released, it's going to be distributed in like a four state region, and one of the states, of course, is Massachusetts. So I'm just waiting to see how that turns out.
That would be
such an amazing thing.
It is. Yeah, we both wanted to say something at the same time. Go ahead, child.
No, I'm telling you, go ahead.
That is just so amazing because I just was reading the little description here and I saw that, and I just wanted to kind of touch base on that because I am a person with a disability myself. And as Charlie knows that I can use my disability to my advantage. So I just wanted to kind of touch base and see what that was all about, that project was all about.
Yeah,
well, that's a really good project.
It's not so much about a workplace thing, but making people in general aware of what the issue is, and never mind that there's action that can be taken just to make sure that you're safe and not taken advantage of because of your disability.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great project to be involved with. So, Roderick, what do you have coming down the pike as far as other projects, plays, films?
Well, right now I'm looking at working on an independent film this weekend for a friend of mine at T-Burns Productions. And, you know, looking at being either a worker for a hospital or a patient as a background person.
That's excellent.
And that's just a short project. And later on, maybe something in January, production in Hingham, and looking at maybe something in the summer, another play for me to grow a little bit more, maybe a Shakespeare piece. I'm not exactly sure at the moment.
That's excellent, though. I can't get over the Shakespeare. It's phenomenal. I can't believe the time flew by. Roderick, you have been amazing. What an amazing guest. We definitely have to have you back because we didn't even cover like one-tenth of the stuff that you've done and, you know, the stuff that you're involved with. You're an amazing talent. Now that I know you can sing, next time you're going to have to, like, send me an MP3 of yourself beforehand so we can play it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I would love to come back. Absolutely.
Definitely. I mean, I am so impressed with you. Well, I was already impressed with you, but now I'm, like, even more impressed because it's just, and I'm telling you, it just pumped me up because, like I said, you do not look your age. You do not act your age. You're in phenomenal shape. You look great. And just to learn that you've come to this late and the way you've embraced it, the caliber of productions that you're involved with is just phenomenal. And definitely congratulations to you, and I hope you keep up the great work, and I know great things are going to come down the road for you.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for having me here.
Absolutely. Roderick, would you like to say hello to anybody out there?
Well, I know I've got one friend out there that's listening in a lap. Her name is Hillary Scott, and I don't know if my daughters are out there listening at all, Maisha and Taisha Wilmore, but I want to thank all my Facebook friends and all my friends on Facebook that have helped me with my growth and helping me along, and I just appreciate all my friends.
That's awesome. Well, definitely. And if you guys want to listen, learn more about Roderick, he's on Facebook. His name is Roderick, R-O-D-E-R-I-C-K, Wilmore. And you can Google him, and he will definitely pop up. You'll see his smiling, youthful face. He's also on our film space as well as other sites. And definitely looking forward to having you back and hearing more about your plans coming up for the near future because, like I said, I see great things coming on. Mountain Man, thank you so much for coming back. I'm so psyched to have you back in the building.
You are welcome, and I am glad to be back because I've heard so many problems here, so I said I got to get myself well taken care of and get my tail back to the house so I can help my favorite host work her show.
I'm telling you, it was horrible. The whole switchboard scenario, everything. I mean, it's like, yeah. Mountman's actually the brains of the operations. I just kind of like, whatever. I just bring the guest in and that's it. But he handles everything else. To everybody in the chat room, thank you so much. Oh, and by the way, if any of you did not get an opportunity, Roderick, you can tell them as well. They didn't get a chance to listen live. They can go to blogtalkradio.com/ordinarywoman. The segment will actually be there. They can download it and keep a copy of it, as well as yourself. If you're interested, you can get a copy for free. Keep it, put it on your website, whatever you want to do with it. Keep it as a souvenir. It would be great. Oh, and one of the things I've been asking my guests to do is that I'll send you my address later. I want you to send me a picture of yourself autographed. I'm starting my little wall of fame here because I'm waving big things. Yes, so I definitely want to get a picture of you with your autograph. That would be awesome so I can actually have it up on my wall. That would be great.
Alrighty.
So, to everybody, thank you so much. I can't believe we're out of time. And I just want to remind you that for Mountain Man and myself, remember, do not let anybody ever, ever steal your dreams away. Those are yours and yours alone, and only you can take them away from you. And remember, sky's the limit. Just reach out there and grab some. Have a great night, and I will leave you out with, oh, there's that lady. See, we're on time, Mountain Man. We're actually doing good. So I think today we're going to check out with one of my favorite songs, The Fighter. So this is going out to
Come on,
Kelly.
The Fighter, best song on there.
Yes, I'm putting The Fighter. This is going out to my girl, Shelly Nunchucks in Maine, and I hope she enjoys it. And to all my listeners, Roderick and Mountain Man, good night and have a great one.
Great, good night.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands tight, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I'm just bracing, I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the brakes ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb, my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong. Be patient, meet them head to head. I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove I'm a fighter. It's not an option to lose. I don't think they're ready for me. I don't think they're ready.
for me. Take rounds of glory. My people in the mill, man, they know the story. Gotta make it global.